south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, I get a lot of emails, and after a while, you get so many, you have to delete them. I just deleted 9,000. How's that? I guess that's like a year's worth. But you know, I read them all. Impossible to answer them all, but I read them all. And I'd say probably one out of every 40 or 50 is someone dissing me, calling me a jerk, a bigot, a Nazi, racist, sexist, telling me I'm going to go to hell or telling me to go to hell. On the other hand, I get a lot of nice emails from people telling me I'm going to go to heaven, which means I'm never going to meet Jimi Hendrix or John Lennon. So maybe if it exists and I do go, I'll ask for a weekend pass. So I have to say, if the positive emails are running in my favor, 40 or 50 to 1, could be I'm doing something wrong. Any ideas? Because, you know, in this business, a little hate mail is good for you. Keeps you grounded, on your toes. If not, you end up like the ass, I mean mass media, talking heads. However, being that I was born and bred in and around Chicago, a Midwesterner through and through, sometimes, you know, I get emails from people from other parts of the country who don't quite get Midwestern slang and colloquialisms. For example, Dave writes in, and he says, Johnny, first time I heard you say cyclone fence. I thought, what the hell's he talking about? But after some research, I found out it's just a chain link fence. I guess that's the name for it in certain parts of the country. I listened to one of your shows today and I really liked it. Some very good information about houses and places to live in Latin America. And you know, Johnny, I used to make notes about which shows had house information and the timestamp of those shows, but those notes have somehow ended up on an old computer of mine. As for the one I just listened to, I really learned a lot. For example, make sure the builder does not use high gauge or thinner wires or 2-inch drain pipes instead of 3 or 4. Then he says, I've visited Latin America and I always wondered why in some Latin American restrooms I could always smell sewer gas. But because of your stories about the plumbers who will ask you if you want a wax ring installed in your toilet or not, now I know why. Wow, smelling sewer gas the rest of your life just to save a buck or two by not installing a wax ring seal. Hard to believe. Wow. Then he says, Johnny, you know, I never missed a show. Thanks for all your efforts. Dave from San Diego. Well, thanks for that, Dave. And by the way, he's one of my expat insider previous attendees. Great guy, adventurous spirit, true survivor. So anyway, as Dave says, it's true, no matter where you're from, you're going to have your local saying, slang, and terms for certain things that other people, even if they speak the same language, won't understand or connect with at all. So things can get lost in translation, even between two people speaking the same language, or so they think. Like, for example, as Dave says, cyclone fence. I thought everybody knew what that was. Guess not. You know, when you come from the Midwest, there's not much danger of earthquakes or hurricanes. But you do have heavy snow, hailstorms, and tornadoes or cyclones. Now, I remember my grandma had a big farm, and she had closed off a few large sections with a chain link fence. And I remember her saying a cyclone fence, another word for a chain link fence, was cyclone proof because it's just made of wire with big open spaces, so heavy destructive winds can pass right through it. By the way, I remember when I was a kid, we'd have 10 or 15 tornado warnings a year. They'd be on the radio and TV. They'd say, get in your cellar and all that. And in my life, I've actually seen 3 tornadoes. 1 touchdown and 2 still rotating up in the air. And man, they scare the hell out of you. However, living on Lake Michigan, 3 times in my life, I saw tornadoes on the water. They call them water spouts. Now, those are the creepiest looking things. Now, as far as tornadoes in Latin America, I've never heard of a single one in Central America, though I've heard of a few in South America, but they're very, very rare. So to address a few of Dave's comments about sewer gases and horrible smells in Latin restaurants and homes, I have to say right here, and I'm going to catch some flack for it, that you as a gringo or gringa in Latin America will soon enough find out. There are some things you'll encounter in certain Latin homes that you'll never get used to. Sure, you'll meet some very nice Latinos and their families. You might even end up hooking up with one or two romantically or otherwise. And you're sure to get invited to birthday parties and dinners in Latin homes. But believe me, and I can tell you this with 100% certainty, You'll want to spend as little time as possible in their bathrooms, and you might want to hold your breath the whole time. Here's a conundrum. How do you tell your significant other, Latino or Latina, that you just hate going over to his or her parents' house, and you can't stand using the bathroom? Amongst other things you'll find in the average Latin American middle-class bathroom is a garbage can full of used toilet paper.
Ew.
Believe me, you'll find that in almost all middle and lower middle class homes, and some upper middle class ones too. And that's simply because the toilet paper won't go down the toilet because of undersized pipes. On top of that, there's that sewer gas problem. Not an appealing scenario, especially if you're invited over for dinner. So how's that sewer gas thing happen? Why can't it be controlled? Well, if you've never seen anyone install a toilet, hey, you can always go to YouTube and see how it's done. By the way, YouTube's great for informational things like that, but watching someone install a toilet's like watching paint dry. But did you know that when you're watching any YouTube video, if you click on the settings, you can speed your YouTube up in increments up to twice the normal speed. Good news if you've got a short attention span like me, or if you're forced to watch something that's dead boring. Just a little tip there. So anyway, the proper technique to use when you're installing a toilet is to first, before you drop the toilet down, buy one of those wax rings that Dave was talking about, a couple bucks. But Latins, you know, figured out a long time ago that if you goop up the silicone seal around the base of the toilet when it's on the floor, that'll stop the sewer gases from backing up into the room. For a while, anyway. By the way, for us in the first world, it's duct tape. It'll fix anything, right? For Latins, it's silicone caulk. Man, they use about 100 times as much of that stuff as they need to. My advice, don't ever let your maintenance guy loose with a tube of that stuff. So anyway, a little or a lot of silicone caulk around the base of the toilet, that'll work for a while, maybe even a couple of years. However, in time, after enough people have graced that throne, especially with that obesity problem they got going down here in Latin America, talk about rocking the boat, huh? Eventually, you can imagine. Well, maybe you don't want to imagine. Just the tiniest break or gap in the silicone seal will allow sewer gas to penetrate into the bathroom. However, if your plumber or contractor installed that toilet the right way, they'd have used a $2 or $3 seal. Made out of soft wax, looks like a donut that's about 4 times normal size. And believe me, that thing will make a seal that'll last 100 years. Well, maybe not at Oprah's or Michael Moore's house. Yep, a wax seal and your toilet bolted to the floor is the plumbing code up in the first world. By the way, down here you'll notice if you look at the base of the toilet, about half the time, there are no bolts holding it down. That means they're, again, counting on that silicone to keep that toilet from doing a dance. And, of course, down here in Latin America, they have the very same first world codes translated into Spanish, but no inspections. You knew that already. Because, you know, even if an inspector happened to pop into your construction site because his car broke down or had a flat tire in front of your house or something, he wouldn't notice a violation anyway. He hasn't read the code books. Same with the cops. They don't know the rules of the road. Anyway, if an inspector ever did show up, it'd be to say hi because he wanted to meet the only gringo in the neighborhood. Of course, if you're on the gringo tourist trail and you're building a house, office, whatever, most likely inspectors still won't come by unless one of your jealous gringo neighbors or your jealous gringo competition files a complaint against you. Hey, I've seen that happen. Funny how some gringos can get real edgy, but Latins will tolerate almost anything. In fact, in Costa Rica, a friend of mine lived in an upscale subdivision, built a nice house there, had empty lots on both sides of them for a number of years. Then one day, the contractors came in, started digging a foundation right next door. A gringo had bought the lot and started building. And you know, here in Latin America, it takes around a year to build anything. So as usual, a little tin hut went up, which is a dual-purpose little storage room for cement and tools and a place for a guard to live 24/7, sometimes with his wife, kids, dogs, and driveway chickens. So in this case, for a whole year, a guy, his kid, his wife, his dog, and some driveway chickens lived not 50 feet away from his house. And remember, at a new construction site like that, there's no plumbing or sewer. It's something you'd rather not think about. So for a year, he's got that family cooking with firewood, no sewer, no plumbing, right next to my buddy in a nice, beautiful house that'd go for $300,000 or $400,000 if it was in a Chicago suburb. So he did what any gringo would do. He went down to the municipality and complained. They smiled and nodded, took his complaint, but thought he was nuts. because that's how all construction projects are done. Same way his house was built. But that's not all. After a while, he realized the structure is going to be three stories, blocking his beautiful view of the mountains. Again, he went down to the municipality. They smiled and nodded, took his complaint, and thought he was nuts. Oh, and he brought it up a couple of times at the homeowners association meetings, too. And of course, all homeowner and condo associations have their rules. However, this is Latin America, and such rules and regulations are bent and broken all the time. I mean, let's face it, you could live in a very upscale, gated, guarded community here in Latin America, and a good quarter to a third of the people living there are months and months behind on paying their maintenance fees. Try that up in the States for just a month, and it'll cut off your water and your garbage pickup. We're talking about Latinos, of course, who appear to be loaded. Huge houses, big black SUVs with bodyguards. Their kids with the latest iPhones going to helicopter schools, too. You know, the upper 1 and 2%ers. Oh, and here's a good one. I was talking to Bitcoin Dan the other day. He rents a nice, I guess it'd be around 3,000 square foot house in a gated, guarded community. And I'd say the houses there range from around 200,000 to a million or so. And if you drive up and down the streets of that community, you'll see some very well manicured lawns and beautiful upscale cars, Audis, Beamers, Mercedes. Yet when you drive in, the first thing that you see at the guard check is a big screen TV showing all the people, dozens and dozens of them, who again are months and months behind on their maintenance payments. Seems to be a common occurrence these days. You drive through a guard station and you instantly see a bulletin board or big screen TV with all the neighborhood deadbeats posted on it. Meanwhile, in another large Latin city, a gringo friend of mine lives in a gated, guarded community that also has a bulletin board full of deadbeats on it. Everyone gets to see it right when you drive in. But I noticed the last time I visited him about a month ago, still had the bulletin board, but there wasn't a single name on it anymore. So I said to my friend, it must have worked. They couldn't take the embarrassment and they all paid up, right? I would too. He said, wrong. No, Johnny, you're thinking like a gringo now. Turns out, he said, at the last homeowners association meeting, people were upset about that list. And instead of putting pressure on these guys to pay their maintenance, there were so many people in attendance that were behind on their maintenance that they voted not to speed up collections, but to eliminate the bulletin board. Duh. So there is a lesson to be learned here. If you're going to buy, build, rent, whatever, choose your lot, your location, and the type of neighbors that you want carefully. Even so, you're likely to have a neighbor that'll bend or even break the rules of your homeowners association, and there's nothing you can do about it. Except maybe if it's a very flagrant violation, and you can get some other homeowners to go along with you. I mean, look, if they can't even collect month upon month of maintenance fees, how do you expect them to remove a junked car that's been parked out in front of your house for 6 months? Or you can do what expat Eddie did. You pick out a nice gated, guarded community, and you buy three lots. You build on the one in the middle, and the other two become big gardens, a buffer zone. In fact, just the other day, I was visiting expat Oscar, the cryptocurrency miner. He's renting in what appears to be a very nice townhouse complex, but he doesn't like it one bit. He's got all kinds of complaints about the place. For starters, right outside his unit, there are four spots for visitor parking, and there's a sign posted there that says, visitors parking 24 hours maximum. And he tells me that the two cars, more or less junks, that have been occupying two of those spaces have been there for months. And that's a decent, slightly upper middle class subdivision. So much for the 24-hour parking rule, huh? And the fact is, it doesn't matter if you're talking about lower middle class, upper middle class, even wealthy people in very high-end subdivisions. Homeowner and condo rules are being broken all the time. Surprisingly enough, even in very high-end subdivisions, there'll be dead cars on the street. Could be pretty decent cars, but they look like they haven't been started or moved for months. Seems like no matter what class of Latinos you're talking about, they never have enough parking places for the number of cars they end up accumulating. Oh, and here's something a lot of gringos and expats complain about. If you're thinking about renting a condo or an apartment, you're going to end up sharing some common walls with your neighbors. If you're the type that craves peace and quiet, you ain't going to get it. Because, as every long-term gringo and expat will tell you, Latin families operate in a much higher decibel level than any gringo family you know. The kids play loud, the music's loud, dogs barking at all hours. At night, you got the telenovela soap opera channels blasting, and on weekends, macho guys in the family have that soccer channel going full volume. And when there's a strategic goal, the whole neighborhood shouts it. So unless you have earplugs or you're deaf, you're not going to get too much peace and quiet living in a traditional apartment or condo complex. Unless you find a project that doesn't allow kids or pets. That'll cut down the ambient noise by half at least. There are some projects out there like that, but not many. However, be warned, no matter where you are in Latin America, you will hear a driveway rooster or two crowing in the wee hours of the morning. You could say it's Latin America's national bird, like the American eagle is to us, though we generally don't pluck them and eat them. All right, let's change gears, literally. Let's talk about the exploding numbers of cheap and crappy motorcycles that are invading every corner of Latin America. So what's that all about and why is it happening? It began in a big way about 2 or 3 years ago when dealers started offering very cheap and long-term financing, monthly payments with no money down. Before that, you had to have at least a third down or pay cash. But that's all changed now. So what we've got now is extremely cheap motorcycles coming in from China and India. In fact, I was looking at one of the major Panama newspapers the other day. Turns out now you can buy a brand new 125cc motorcycle for under $1,000. By the way, 125cc's. That's more or less the standard size for all the junk class motorcycles here in Latin America. Though I've seen some 90, even 75cc pieces of junk. Anyway, the average Latin making minimum wage, $350 a month, can now easily afford a motorcycle on payments. I've seen 125cc bikes from India and China going for as low as $700. And now dealers are routinely offering payment plans of 3 years at $20 or $25 a month. Now, you might be thinking, hey, buy what you want, buy what you can afford. Problem is, and I've mentioned this before, 50% of all the people driving motorcycles in Latin America do not have a driver's license. That puts everyone else on the road at risk. Problem number two. They can and do drive like absolute maniacs because they know the police can almost never succeed in pulling them over. If you've been listening to me for a while, you've heard me say there are no high-speed chases in Latin America. That's not the way the cops and patrols do things here because they haven't got the gasoline to even do routine patrols. They just find a spot, park and wait, eat junk food, sleep a bit, drive for an hour or so, park and wait again, etc. And even when they set up those routine roadblocks, the only time I've ever seen them pull over a motorcycle is when it's heavily overloaded with either material or maybe 3 or 4 people on it. In other words, it's puttering along too heavy and slow to make evasive maneuvers and avoid the cops. However, it doesn't matter much to the cops that there's no way to really pull over motorcycles because anyone who's got a motorcycle, unless it's a Harley, Ducati, or BMW, a high-end job, is broke and certainly doesn't have money for a bribe. So for cops, pulling over a motorcycle is not lucrative at all. Now, as for me, I see motorcycle accidents all the time. I've plastered a few myself. Sure, it lowers the count of idiots on the road, but it does ruin your day, you know. So I don't recommend it. However, the fact is, everyone who drives a car here in Latin America is really ticked off at motorcyclists, especially in cities where the gringos are piling in and just can't believe what they're seeing. Now, for more solid proof on this subject, I submit for your approval this article from one of the English language tourist rags in Ecuador, dated March 14, 2018, and I'll paraphrase where needed. It says, responding to citizen complaints, the city councils of Quito and Guayaquil, Ecuador, are considering new regulations that would allow municipal police to fine and arrest motorcyclists. All right, it's me, Johnny, here. That deserves a little explanation in itself. So, as suspected, the police in Ecuador, at least up to now, do not even have orders to stop and arrest motorcyclists who are breaking the law. How about that? But they are just now considering it. Ooh. Now, generally, when down here in Latin America, you'll note that people are breaking traffic laws constantly. Fact is, practically every motorcyclist runs red lights on a daily, even hourly basis. He'll do it with impunity right in front of a cop and he won't even bat an eye. So we've got this article from Ecuador that says motorcyclists are breaking so many laws, they've had so many complaints, they're thinking about having the cops pull them over and fine them. Now that suggests that up till now, motorcyclists have been able to get away with anything. And believe me, they do. Then it goes on to say, public complaints against motorcyclists are mounting, as well as many citizen complaints that motorcycles, specifically two on a bike, are involved in serious crimes. It says in Ecuador there have been a dozen murders and hundreds of thefts involving two on a motorcycle. That being the case, Guayaquil has already passed an ordinance that restricts the hours in which motorcyclists are allowed to carry a passenger. So how do motorcyclists assault and rob people? Well, they pull up to a busy street corner, usually in a crap section of town. The passenger in the back of the bike puts a gun up to your window, generally demanding your smartphone because he can see you're on it or texting away. And statistics show, surprise, surprise, that's a scenario that overwhelmingly happens with women drivers. And at night, those cell phones throw off a lot of light when you're using them, so that makes you a big target. So there you have it, another law passed that'll never be enforced. Anyway, the article says when you restrict the times a motorcycle can carry other passengers, it's supposed to reduce serious crimes, but does not address public safety issues. The proof is that since 2014, Guayaquil has experienced a 250% increase in injuries due to careless driving by motorcyclists. Then the article goes on to say, everyone knows motorcyclists routinely break the law. They drive wherever they want, between lanes of cars, over curbs, onto sidewalks, ignoring red lights, and ignoring most all traffic signals. Motorcycle accidents are skyrocketing, and it's not just motorcycles hitting or being hit by cars. It's motorcycles hitting other motorcycles and motorcyclists hitting pedestrians. The problem is lack of enforcement. The laws were passed many years ago. It seems there are two different sets of roadway rules. Rules for cars and trucks and almost no rules for motorcyclists. So who to blame? Well, the police, of course. By the way, according to some newspaper reports, the country with the worst motorcycle problem by far is, can you guess? Time's up. Colombia. In fact, in Medellin, it's so bad they're referred to as moto terrorists. And in big cities like Bogota, there are many, many streets with crosswalks where the people won't cross because motorcyclists just won't stop and pedestrians get trampled. One of the big problems is that motorcycle cops themselves violate all traffic laws too. They weave through traffic, talking and texting, make turns from wrong lanes, run red lights, drive the wrong way down one-way streets, have burnt-out lights, don't use turn signals or helmets. Makes you want to drive a junker, doesn't it? You know, this very subject came up in an op-ed piece just a couple Sundays ago. Turns out the writer of the piece had just clobbered a motorcycle the day before. And his solution was, get this, make all motorcyclists take a driving test before they get their license. Wait a minute. Did I hear that right? Is he saying there's no on-the-road driving test for a motorcycle license? Well, that's a fact in practically all Latin countries, but there is a short written test. Don't you feel better about it now? Oh yes, that would be a good start, making them take a road test. But then again, since 50% of motorcycle pilots don't even have a driver's license, I'd say there's more than a couple of pieces missing in that puzzle. Oh, and by the way, about 3 or 4 months ago, expat Eddie clobbered a motorcycle with his pickup. And how'd that happen? Well, the guy on the motorcycle ran a red light. I'd say that's how the majority of motorcycle crashes happen, which is why I can't emphasize enough the fact that when you see a green light, it's not really a green light, especially at night. Get it in your mind to treat it like a four-way stop, because if you don't, you treat it like going through a green light up in the States. There will come a day when you will be sorry. You've heard me say before that if you get in a car accident or hit a motorcyclist and you put the guy in a hospital, when the cops get there, they'll impound your car. Which is why you always should carry liability insurance, because then you call your insurance company and they won't impound your car. It's as simple as that. Just let the insurance company handle the whole thing and never admit it was your fault. In fact, that's exactly what it says on the back of your insurance card. In Spanish, of course, it says don't admit wrongdoing, even if it was your fault. In other words, just keep your mouth shut till the insurance guy gets there and let him do all the talking. The thing is, if you get in an accident, no matter how inconsequential or severe it is, once you pull out your insurance card and the cops realize you really have insurance, the whole mood of the situation changes and all of a sudden, you've got the upper hand. Because in Latin America, only about 5% of drivers carry insurance. That means when there's an accident and the cops show up, if neither party has insurance, which is usually the case, it's always kind of a testy situation with one person blaming the other and vice versa, arguing about whose fault it was, who's going to pay for this, and who's going to pay for that. But that all changes when one or both of the parties has insurance. Oh, and by the way, just recently I was talking to a traffic cop, and he told me about 50% of the people who get in accidents who have a policy in the glove compartment and an insurance card are no longer insured because they skipped a few payments. Typical mañana mentality, huh? So generally the cops won't make a move till you call your insurance and that insurance van arrives. Because, you know, he won't come if you missed a few payments. So anyway, just a few months ago, Eddie flattened a motorcycle that ran a red light. And of course, Eddie had insurance. The motorcyclist didn't. That's normal. Not to mention his plates, or what they call the circulation down here, were expired. And he didn't have a valid driver's license. He had an old one, but that too was expired. Oh, and I forgot to mention, the bike was totaled and the guy had a broken ankle. Now, this was on a fairly busy street in a middle-class neighborhood. A lot of pedestrian traffic, so the gapers started crowding around. And while Eddie was phoning up his insurance company, that's the first thing to do, right? He saw a couple of blocks down, coming his way, a cop car with the cherries flashing. And he was thinking, man, that's amazingly fast response time for a Latin cop. But instead of stopping at the accident scene where all the gapers were gathered around, he just kept on going. Eddie said he probably had a rendezvous with a runaway box of donuts. No, but that's not really true, because down here in Latin America, donuts aren't part of the cop culture. Not yet, anyway. So what about that phenomena you see down here with Latin cops riding around in their police cruisers day and night with the cherries flashing like they're always after someone or on a hot lead? Which is why, again, here's a tip. If a cop pulls up behind you, he's got the cherries flashing, do not freak out. Do not feel nervous. It's not about you. You've done nothing wrong. And even if you had, they don't know the rules, so they probably didn't notice anyway. Now, Eddie has his own explanation why cops ride around with their cherries flashing. He says the average cop has an IQ of about 70, so they just like the flashing lights and the sound of the siren. And for cops with a little higher IQ, they keep the lights flashing because it minimizes the chances they'll have to deal with an actual criminal or a crime in progress, because they'll have alerted the criminals a couple of minutes before they get to the crime scene. As for me, I kind of go with both arguments. All right, one last thing. Remember, I've got my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar coming up. All the information and the early bird sign-up details are at www.thenewexpat.com. Just click on the seminar link. And remember, if you sign up, you get a free one-on-one, one-hour phone consult with me. So any questions you have about the seminar or your own plan B, we can sort it out then. So check it out, www.thenewexpat.com. When you're there, you'll also find out how to kill two birds with one stone. That is, start your Guatemalan residency while you're down at the seminar. And you'll find out all about those famous John Galt pre and post seminar trips. You know, they're especially valuable if you're thinking your plan B will entail starting some kind of business down here. Because, you see, if you don't come away from that experience with all kinds of business ideas, either you didn't have your eyes wide open or you drank too much tequila. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.